Hey, good morning. My name is Jeremiah. I'm one of the pastors here at Westridge, and we are thrilled to have you here today. Welcome, welcome. Go ahead and grab your outline. That'll help you follow along with the talk this morning. I want to say hello to those of you in our parent viewing area as well. Thanks for joining us there. That's a great option if you have small children that you prefer to keep with you during the service. Also, hello to those of you that are checking this out online. Thanks for joining us through that venue as well. And man, we are in week number three of a series called Made for More. We're wrapping up this series today. And if you missed either of the first 2 weeks, I'd encourage you to go back and check those out online. And the whole point of this series has been that you were made for more. Made for more than to simply exist. Made for more than to simply kind of wander through life. As a matter of fact, we've said throughout this series that Jesus actually came to earth and said, "The reason I've come is to give you life and to give you life to the fullest. To be able to live a life that is full, a rich and satisfying life." And if we're honest with ourselves, that's really what we want, right? We want to live a rich and satisfying life. We want to live life to the fullest. None of us wants to arrive at the end of our life only to realize that we squandered it, that we wasted it, that we kind of wandered through life with no purpose. We all want our life to count for something. And I think because of that, there is a drive in us to be known for something. There's a drive in us to want to be known for something. All of us want to be known for something. So we have some adjectives in mind when we come to mind. If someone were to ask you, what do you want people to think about you? At the end of your life, what are the things that you want people to think about you? You probably have some adjectives that come to mind. And it affects how we interact with other people. It certainly affects what we post on social media. It affects our life in a big way. What is it that you want to be known for? For some people want to be known for being great in business, being a great business person. For others, it's being a great spouse or a great parent. For some, they want to be known for being smart. For some, they want to be known for being well-liked. For some people, they want to be known for being well-traveled or cultured. For other people, they want to be known for being wealthy. Or for others, it's being wise. And for most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, there are usually some gaps between what we want people to know about us and how life actually is, right? There's the public image that we sort of put out there, and then there's what's really going on behind the scenes. And oftentimes, at least in one or a couple areas of our life, there are some gaps there. There's a difference between the me that I'm sort of projecting and the me that really is. And so whenever we have that gap, we feel the need to pretend. We feel the need to sort of hide that and sort of make up the difference. I came across this on my Facebook earlier this week. It was an article that said, here are, it was like 20 people who got busted on Facebook not being genuine. And I was dying laughing because one was a picture of a guy, and he said, after 1 week of working out, I transformed my abs into six-pack abs. And there's this picture, and it's completely different color skin. It does not match up at all. You can tell he cut and pasted somebody else's abs onto his in Photoshop. And underneath the comments are just, I'm dying laughing reading the comments. One was, what happened to your belly button, bro? He had no belly button. Forgot to Photoshop the belly button back in. So I was cracking up at that. Another one said, it was a girl who said, I've made the decision to go vegan. And I think this really, I just can't, live my life anymore knowing how animals are treated. I feel like this really represents a maturity in me as I grow. And underneath it is the comment right away from one of her friends, you didn't feel that way a couple of hours ago when you got half chicken, half steak on your Chipotle burrito. Busted, right? And I just think it's hilarious that there is something in us. What is it? Well, I want to be known in a certain way. And if my life doesn't fully measure up to that, then I feel the need on some level to kind of project that anyways, to kind of pretend in some way. And yet, when you think about living life to the fullest, about living a rich and satisfying life, image management isn't really high on the priority list, is it? As a matter of fact, we discover this pretty early on in the story of humanity. You were created by God for authentic community. It's one of the reasons that we exist. In other words, while we all want to be known for something, it's a lot more important that we're known by a group of someones. That's a lot more valuable. And we can try to live up to the adjectives as much as we want to, but living life to the fullest is a lot more than being known for something. It's about being known by a group of someones. And what we discover from the very beginning is that humanity was designed by God to exist in authentic community, being fully known and fully loved. As a matter of fact, if you read through the creation story, we discover this in Genesis 1. Then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us." So God created human beings in his own image. Look at the pronouns here. Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. God himself exists in community. God himself exists in community. God is not this singular entity sort of wandering around the cosmos in a big robe looking for friends. God is community. He exists in community. And the reason that this is so vital and so important for us to understand is because love itself cannot exist outside of community. In order for love to exist, there has to be community, because love is not an emotion. If love was simply something that we feel, then love could exist even if you were the only person in the world that existed. You could experience love if it was an emotion. But love is not an emotion. Love is an action. Love is something that you do, right? And so the only way to act when it comes to love is to act on behalf of or towards someone else. Therefore, a prerequisite to experiencing love is someone else. Love requires community. See, our tendency, though, is to hide the worst of ourselves, because we learn really early on in life, hide the crazy, right? We're afraid we won't live up to the adjectives that we want to be known for. Here's the things I want to be known for, and if I don't live up to that, what will people think of me? That's why we never introduce ourselves to people like, "Hey, I'm Sally, great to meet you. Yeah, I need lots and lots of validation. I go from relationship to relationship because I grew up feeling ugly and unwanted. How about you?" We don't do that, right? Because we know we're afraid of what people will think if we let them in too close to know the real us. And yet, community is so critical. Authentic community, to be fully known and fully loved, is critical not only to our spiritual well-being, just simply to our health. Listen to this. A researcher named Robert Putnam did a study on the effects of community and isolation on human beings. He concluded that isolated people are 3 times more likely to die than people who are embedded in community. Welcome to church. Not just that, but he said this: people who had bad health habits, smoking, unhealthy eating, obesity, alcohol consumption, but strong social ties, lived significantly longer than people who had great health habits but were isolated from other people. In other words, it is much healthier for you to eat Dairy Queen blizzards with your friends than to eat quinoa on your own. That's amazing. They did another study, and they had people who were willing to be infected with the common cold. And people with strong emotional and relational connections did 4 times better fighting off the illness. Relationally connected people were less susceptible, had less virus, and I don't even know how they measured this, produced significantly less mucus than isolated people. That means disconnected people are literally snottier than connected people. Isn't that incredible? Putnam said, if you make no other changes, you make no other changes, you don't start working out, you don't start eating any better, but you join a small group or a home church, as we call it here, and you were previously not in a home church or a small group, you cut the odds of dying this year in half. Isn't that incredible? So, if you like living, I'm just saying. The research bears it out. Now, these are simply documented positive effects on your physical bodies. Imagine the well-being on your spiritual side. Imagine the effects on your spiritual well-being. We cannot escape community. We can't escape relationships. You and I were created in the image of a communal and relational God. And so the desire for community is a part of us. The desire, and that doesn't mean that some of us have 100 friends, some of us have 2 friends. But on somewhere along the line, you desire for someone who knows you fully and loves you completely. We are wired for that. We are created for that. Like water and oxygen, we need relationships. We need authentic community. With that in mind, here are 4 keys to understanding authentic community. And the first one is this: authentic community always requires engagement. It always requires engagement. In other words, authentic community never happens by accident. It is not something that you are going to stumble into. And proximity is not the same as community. Okay, community is about someone who fully knows you and fully loves you. Proximity is what I have with the person who's getting their hair cut next to me. That's not community. That's proximity. But because of trying to live up to this image of ourselves that we've painted in our own minds, we're not always 100% comfortable with each other, are we? We come in and we smile and shake hands and say hello, and over time we learn a little bit about each other. I know from meeting some of you in the lobby before church or after church that some of you are incredibly smart and intelligent. I've learned from some of you that you're really kind. I've learned from some of you that you are really big encouragers. I've discovered that some of you are downright creepy. I don't think any of us mind being cordial. We don't mind staying on the surface. That's just a part of our culture. We don't mind spying on each other on Facebook, right? But if we're going to experience someone who knows us and loves us, that is something that we have to actively pursue and participate in. It is not something that happens by accident. It is not something you will stumble into. You have to engage. And here's the reality. You will probably in your life, you will tend to become like the 5 to 6 people that you spend the most time with. And so who are you allowing to influence your life? See, acquaintances are the result of circumstance, but true, authentic community and friendships, those are the result of choice. Those are the result of intentionally putting yourself into environments where you can create those kinds of relationships. And frankly, that's why we do home churches. That's what this is. On your way in, you got a home church catalog. And this catalog is all the different home churches that are available starting 3 weeks from today. They all launch February 11th, the week after the Super Bowl. And this is a great way to get connected with some other people. Why do we do this? Because it gives you the opportunity to engage. It gives you an avenue to say, okay, I'm going to intentionally put myself into a group of people, some relationships where we're moving in the same direction spiritually. See, this is encouraged throughout the scriptures. As a matter of fact, the author of Hebrews writes this: "Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise." So he talks about hope, he talks about this promise, something that we're looking forward to as a faith community. As followers of Jesus, there is a hope, a future promise. And what is that? It's that one day Jesus will return, that one day what is broken in this world will be set right, that the brokenness inside of us will be set right, that there will be healing, and that the world will operate the way that it should. Everything will be renewed and restored. And so the author is saying, God is going to keep his promise. Let's hold to that hope. And then he continues, the author continues, "Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. And let us not neglect meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near." The author says, look, that promise, that hope that we have, one day it's going to happen, but until then, our mandate, our command is to continue to show up in each other's lives, encouraging each other, motivating each other to acts of love and good deeds. It says there's a day coming. What is a day that everyone looks forward to in our culture? It's oftentimes Friday, right? We have a saying, TGIF, thank God it's Friday. We have an entire restaurant chain committed to celebrating that. And yet, this author says, no, there's another day that we look forward to. There's another day coming when all things will be renewed and restored and will be set right. And until that day comes, don't stop getting together. Don't stop gathering. And the context is not a Sunday morning service. They didn't have what we have in terms of a Sunday morning service. What they had was churches that met in homes. We just adopted that phrasing and call them home churches. And what the context of this is with people that you're engaged in relationship with, that you know, because you've spent time together in a church home where you know them. And you're face to face, eyeball to eyeball. That's the context. He says, so don't stop doing that. Don't neglect that. Keep getting together. Keep finding ways to motivate each other and encourage one another and spur each other on until eventually that time comes when Jesus returns. See, if we're going to do that, we have to understand this. This is number two. Authentic community always requires honesty. It always requires honesty. I'll tell you something. Everybody's normal till you get to know them. We're all a little bit dysfunctional. That's just the reality. It's called being human. We're all a little dysfunctional. And a lot of times in a community of Jesus followers, we think, man, this is going to be great. People are going to be great. They're going to be mature. They're going to be healthy. They're going to agree with me. They're going to make me feel great about myself. And then you get into community filled with other followers of Jesus and you go, what? That's not the case. We're different from each other. What's going on here? There's some dysfunction. As a matter of fact, turn to the person next to you right now and say, hey, you're a little dysfunctional. Go ahead. Go ahead, all across. Yeah. Yeah. And don't tell them why. Some of you have a list, and let me tell you why. Here's what's amazing, though. We are all a little dysfunctional. It's the truth. But here's what's amazing about the family of God, about this faith community. Everybody's welcome, even though nobody's perfect. Everybody's welcome, nobody's perfect. That's why for years we've latched onto this phrase, no perfect people allowed. That's because if you think you're perfect, you're probably not going to fit in very well. If there's a bunch of things that you go, oh, there's not anything I need to work on. There's nothing in my life that I need help from other people. Then you're probably not going to fit in well around here. And that's because we are a group of screwed up people. That's just the reality. And you know that's true because you just looked down your row. And in the midst of that dysfunction, in the midst of whatever brokenness we carry with us, James, the brother of Jesus, writes this. Make this your common practice. Confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you can live together whole and healed. Confess your sins to each other, pray for each other. And then he says, by doing this, you can live whole and healed. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to start right down here, with confession, share your sins. No, obviously we're not going to do that. But James is writing about this, what, in the context of a Sunday morning service? No. He's saying in the context of people that you know, that you are engaged in authentic community with, that is a safe place to be honest about your struggles. To be honest about, okay, my life is moving this direction. I profess this, and yet I'm behaving this. And what that does is it starts to pull you apart. It starts to disintegrate you. It's where we get the word disintegration, where things come apart. And it means that I'm becoming disintegrated. I'm professing to believe one thing, but I'm actually behaving like this. And the longer that you live that way, it disintegrates you. It pulls you apart. Confession is the act of reintegrating what I say I believe with how I actually behave. And it heals. That's why it brings you together, and James actually uses this language. It makes you whole and healed. It's a reintegration process of your beliefs and your behavior. And so that's why home churches are so important, because that's not something we can do here on a Sunday morning. But it is something you have the opportunity to, as you develop tighter, deeper connections and friendships and relationships with people, eyeball to eyeball, where you have the opportunity to say, hey, let's talk. I'm struggling. Here's where I'm here's where my life is not integrated. Here's where my life is moving in a different direction. I feel like it's splitting me apart. Here's where I'm hurting. Here's where my struggle is. Here's where I've sinned, and I need to confess because I want to live whole and healed. James says, do that with each other. It's amazing what honesty can do. Take a look in your program. Grab your program. Inside of there, there's a picture of my wife and our four kids. And we do that. It's not an egocentric thing. We do that because we're always trying to find ways to lessen the gap between the stage and the audience. We want this to be, hey, we're all in this together. And so oftentimes for people who are guests, they're wondering, okay, there's this guy up there talking. What is his family like? Is he a weirdo? Is he a normal dude? And the answer is yes, he's a weirdo. But he's okay, he's got a wife, he's got some kids. Okay, I think they seem like a normal-looking group of people. And so that's why we put it in there. It's just to help people sort of acclimate to church world. And yet, you look at this picture. Look at that family. Nice-looking family, right? It is one split second of time captured in a photo. Let me tell you what you do not see in that photo. You do not see the 50 other photos that were taken before that. You don't see the 90 minutes that led up to that picture when my 9-year-old was like this because he didn't want to be in the picture. And he didn't. And this shirt is fine. No one cares that there's a spaghetti stain on the front. And why do I have to comb my hair? And my 3-year-old is bouncing all over the place, and you can't get him ever to look at the camera, ever, not ever. And my daughters are worried about their hair, and we're trying to get everybody in this one picture. But that's what you end up with. And here's what happens. Yeah, from a standpoint of like putting it in our program, we're trying to get a nice family picture, right? But oftentimes, you don't see everything else going on behind the scenes. We want to put the best picture forward. And I think oftentimes we view church the same way. It's like, well, we better capture that perfect snapshot of our family when we show up to church. And you know, yeah, the week was chaos. It was absolutely crazy. But oftentimes people feel like, I better pretend when I get to church. The temptation for us is to pretend even more at church. I mean, look at you guys. Look at how good you look. Some of you got so spruced up, you're wearing your best purple and gold today. And here's the thing, it doesn't even matter that you were screaming at each other the entire way here in the minivan. As soon as that sliding back door opened and you stepped foot into the parking lot, it was all smiles. We're at church. Good morning, good morning. And that minivan door is going to slide shut and the screaming will pick up again. But as long as you're at church, how you doing? What is it in us? It's in me too. Why do we do that? It's because if people knew what we were really like, would they like us? And yet, here's what's so crazy about this. Church is supposed to be the one place you don't have to pretend. Church is supposed to be the one place you don't have to manage your image. That's why we say all the time, come as you are. That's not a catchy slogan that we just like to put on mailers. We really believe that. And because of that, we're so committed to keeping the shame level low here at Westbridge so that you can honestly acknowledge where you need help and together we can move forward. I love what Proverbs 27 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. And sometimes, often, it is in the raw honesty of togetherness that we become the best version of ourselves. So then we can be honest enough to say, here's where I'm struggling. Here's where I'm hurting. Let me remove the mask. Let me remove the facade. Here's the real me. Because I'll tell you something. If nobody knows what you're really like, then they don't really like you. They like the version of you that you're presenting. And whatever it is that's going on in your life, you cannot experience healing as long as you're hiding. The only way to experience healing is to come out from hiding, take off the mask, say, here's me. And then you can be fully known and fully loved. But if we're going to do that, This third key is so critical. Number three, authentic community always requires grace. See, the only way that honesty works is in a culture that is saturated by grace. This isn't something that the Church Universal has always been great at, but I can tell you it is something that Westbridge Church is wholeheartedly committed to. In Ephesians 4, the Apostle Paul is writing to a group of Jesus' followers living in the city of Ephesus. And here's what he writes: always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. Make every effort to keep yourselves united in the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace. Make every effort, he says, to keep yourselves united. Notice he doesn't say that we don't have faults. He simply says that because of love, we make allowance for each other's faults. We give room to each other's faults. It doesn't say that we work to achieve peace or to attain peace. He says we should maintain peace. That means it's a peace that already comes from God's Spirit. Why? Because when two people have both experienced the same grace and forgiveness of Jesus, they are becoming friends, no matter who they used to be. It allows us to be friends with people that we would never have befriended in the past. People that we don't have anything in common with, but we say, oh, you've experienced the grace of Jesus, so have I. And that becomes the thing that bonds us. And Paul says, do everything you can to maintain that. And the way that you do that is by making allowance for each other's faults because of your love, because of your grace, recognizing it's exactly what Jesus did for you. Common thread that is woven through our shared experience is the grace of Jesus in our life. Again, the Apostle Paul writes this to followers of Jesus living in Galatia. He says, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back on the right path. Be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. Share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. Again, that's not something we can do in this context. It's something that we do in smaller groups. Beginning with Jesus and continuing with his followers, we discover that grace is always the engine that leads the train. Jesus came to the earth and he proclaimed grace and he followed it up with truth. And unfortunately, what often happens in churches or sort of quote-unquote Christian circles is that people feel the need to lead hard with truth. And it's, here's what we believe. We're standing for truth. Let me tell you what we believe. And they never get around to the grace part. A common phrase I heard growing up was this: love the sinner, hate the sin. Maybe you've heard that phrase before. The problem with that phrase was that we did such a great job of hating the sin, we never loved the sinner. And love is this tiny little caboose that comes across like this: don't do this, and don't do that, and don't go here, and don't read that, and don't be friends with those people, but we love you. I believe it. Love is this tiny little caboose at the end of the truth train that just clobbers people. I would respectfully submit that as a faith community, we commit to the opposite. That we commit wholeheartedly to lead with love and grace. That love and grace are the engine that drives the train. That sounds a lot more like this: we love you. Man, we care about you. You belong. We're so glad that you're here. Yeah, well, what about my sin? Yeah, that's probably going to hurt you. I'd stop doing that. But by then, the love is not even questioned. The motivation isn't in question. The grace isn't in question. I would submit that's exactly what Jesus did for us. And if we're going to experience an authentic and honest community, then we have got to be wholeheartedly committed to grace. And when you do that, it often gets messy. You get into a community with people, and sometimes you get a sort of romanticized idea about what community truly is. So you show up to a home church at Westbridge. You go, okay, I'm going to pick one out, and this will be good, and we're going to go. And here's what's going to happen. As soon as I get there, it's going to be great, and it's going to feel like the perfect fit, 100%. And then you show up, and it's difficult. And there's somebody there who is, like, way too chipper. You're like, wow, you are a happy person. Or there's somebody here there who's like Debbie Downer. They're just Captain Negative all the time, right? Or there's somebody there that they're not my flavor of politics. They're not my flavor of theology. I don't like how they talk about their faith. They talk too much. They never talk. They're too sensitive. The reality is, Jesus community doesn't mean that you always get to be with people who are easy to be with. Jesus community means you get to be with people who have been forgiven by Jesus, just like you have. And that together we are helping each other learn how to love one another well. And so, if you're going to engage in community, it's going to require honesty, and it's going to require grace. Those things go hand in hand. But when you do, here's number four. Authentic community always provides hope. It always provides hope. Do you want to know what one of the most hope-filled phrases in all of the English language is? Me too. Don't you love it when you're sharing something with a friend or you're going through a difficult time and you feel like in the times where life is difficult, don't you feel like you're the only one experiencing that? And then someone comes along and they go, man, I know how you feel. Me too. I've been there. And doesn't that just lift a weight off of your shoulders? When you discover someone else has been where you're at and you've seen them come out on the other side, something comes to life inside of you. Something inside of you goes, man, if they can make it through, so can I. My wife has been doing this for about a year, and towards the end of the year through the holidays, she convinced me to join her at her gym, and so I joined this 10-week fitness challenge. 10 weeks, 6 days a week, early in the mornings for 10 weeks. First of all, gross. I mean, wow. And I got to tell you, I am 2 weeks in, okay? So we started this, you know, two Mondays ago or whatever. So last 2 weeks, Monday through Saturday, I'm 2 weeks in, and I can tell you, everything hurts. Everything hurts. There are body parts I didn't even know I had that hurt. And you know how badly you're out of shape when you're like angry that you live in a house with stairs. You're like, why do we live here? So many stairs. Oh. You know what I'm talking about when you're doing like the trust fall to the toilet. I know it's there. Oh God. And you're so sore you can't even finish the paperwork. I mean, it's a legitimate problem. And I don't know, like, I am so sore. So because I joined, though, with a group of people, they're there with me every day, and they're doing the same thing, and it's like they're kind of pushing you on, they're cheering you on. And we have a coach who's a part of that, and she's been, I don't remember exactly, but somewhere in the neighborhood of like 170 days in a row she's been there, working out and helping people. And I'm like, holy cow, I can hardly move after 12 days. But she's there and she's going, come on, you got this. And she's sending us, you know, messages throughout the week going, hey, I'll see you tomorrow, bright and early. And I'm just going, oh, man. And I love the fact that she's saying, hey, I remember when I was 2 weeks in and how bad it sucked. Hang in there. It's going to get better. I know you can do it. I know it's tough right now, but you're going to make it. And I think to myself, yeah, all right, I can do this. And I love that. There's something powerful about me too. There's something powerful about, hey, I've been where you are. You can take that next step. The Apostle Paul writes this in 1 Corinthians. All the members, he's talking about how we're all part of one body. He says all the members care for each other. If one part suffers, all the parts suffer with it. And if one part is honored, all the parts are glad. And that's how we behave. That we, when one of us suffers, we suffer. When one of us celebrates, we rejoice. In other words, Paul says, me too. We're in this together. When you're down, I'm down. When you're doing well, I'm doing well. And one of the things that we've worked really hard at doing, anyone who shares a talk from the stage or shares on video, one of the things you'll never hear us doing is saying, hey, let me tell you how amazing I am. Let me tell you. And wouldn't it be better? I wish I could just get up here every week and be like, okay, guys, I became a little bit more of a Jesus Junior this week. Let me tell you how. that would be a lot better, right? A lot easier. But the reality is, we've been open, and everybody who speaks from this stage or shares through video is usually pretty honest about their struggles. And here's why. We recognize that's a lot more helpful. We're trying to lessen the gap between the stage and the seats. We want us to know, hey, we're in this together. Me too. Me too. You yelled at your kids this week? Me too. Oh, you yelled at them this morning? Me too. Oh, you have questions about the Bible? There's some things that you're reading that you don't really understand? Me too. Oh, you're telling me you lose your temper sometimes? Me too. Oh, you tried to pray this week and you fell asleep? Me too. You destroyed an entire bag of Doritos by yourself at 11:30 at night watching infomercials while everyone slept? Me too. Authentic community always provides hope because there is someone by your side going, man, me too. I've been there. We're in this together. You're not alone. You're going to make it through. That's what authentic community does. It provides hope. Who better to help someone dealing with the pain of abuse than someone who has been abused themselves? Who better to help parents who are concerned with the decisions that their kids are making than parents who have been down that road? Who better to help someone deal with an affair than a couple who has been through it? Who better to help someone deal with the loss of a loved one than someone who has lost a loved one? Who better to walk through divorce than someone who has been divorced? Who better to help an alcoholic than someone who has been down that road? This is one of the reasons that we are always transparent, because we want you to know, me too. We're in this together. An authentic community. If we're honest and we work at grace, then it'll always provide hope. So, today you received a catalog with some options, some opportunities to engage in community. A bunch of ways to get connected. And this only happens if you intentionally engage. Now, here's the pushback. I know from some of you, you say, well, I joined a home church once, and it wasn't what I was expecting. Or it didn't live up to my expectations. Or maybe it was just flat out didn't go very well. That happens sometimes. I'll fully acknowledge that. It's because we're a little dysfunctional. There's the human element. And yet, I'll say this. You've had haircuts that didn't go very well. You didn't stop getting haircuts. You've had pizza that didn't turn out very well, and you did not give up on pizza. So I want to encourage you, don't give up on home churches, even if you had a bad experience. You were created by God to be an authentic community with others, and we are truly better together. We all want to be known for something, but I think it's a lot more important that we're known and loved by a group of someones. And so I want to encourage you, check out this home church. And here's the reality, guys. We were created by God to exist in community with him and each other. And it's us as human beings that walked away from that. From the first human beings to every one of us, we walked away from that. And community was broken between us and God, and oftentimes us and each other. And what you find throughout the scriptures is people trying to fix that. And wondering, is God angry? Is God distant? Is he waiting to strike? And so God sent Jesus into the world to assure us that he is for us and not against us. To say, hey, if you wonder what I'm like, look at Jesus. And all Jesus did was love and grace and love and grace and love and grace. And to the point where in an incredible act of love, he allowed himself to be put to death. His body was laid in a tomb. And according to multiple eyewitness accounts, he rose from the dead. What that means is death is not the end. There's more to this life than this life. And you and I have been invited to be a part of God's family, to re-engage in community with God and community with each other.